Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. COVID-19 numbers in South Dakota are still rising. Hospitals are taking on more patients, and people continue to lose their lives to this disease on a daily basis. Our health professionals are learning more and more as we all are hoping for a vaccine. Dr. Chad Turry is Regional Director of Clinical Quality and Family Medicine, a physician at Avera, and he's joining us today with what we know now. Dr. Turry, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me today. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. How do you describe to people the situation in South Dakota regarding SARS-CoV-2 prevalence right now?
I think the statistics talk for themselves. I mean, we are balancing between number one and number two with North Dakota as far as the leading the country in the cases of COVID per 100,000 patients. So our average lately has been around 160 patients per 100,000, which is well above that 5% goal that we would like to shoot for and have those numbers less than that.
So tell us what's happening inside the hospitals. What does COVID care look like?
So from the standpoint of our hospitals, certainly we are seeing increased COVID hospitalization rates. That is stretching our capacity to provide beds that are available for patients that, and not the physical beds, but once again, a lot of it comes back to our human resources, the health staff to take care of those patients. So those staffed beds are certainly getting to be a limited resource at times. You know, at Avera, we do a great job of moving patients from facility to facility. That may be a regional transfer. It may be transferring from a regional facility down to a critical access hospital or vice versa. So we've got a great transfer center that is helping manage all these different moving parts and moving patients to where they can receive the best care at the level of care that they need. So certainly feeling those crunches, we continue to expand our capabilities for trying to get patients in the hospital, so creating new hospital beds or doubling patients sometimes in rooms to help with some of the staffing issues that we deal with. And so that's, you know, the hospital side of things. And then, you know, even the clinic side of things, we're seeing more patients in our clinics that have to do with COVID diagnosis, need for testing, and then even into our at-home population, those numbers are rising as well as the hospitalization rates and even the numbers that we're seeing in the clinic. But our at-home population that we're monitoring that do have COVID and end up needing to go on oxygen and stuff too, we're continuing to see those numbers rise pretty dramatically as well.
What people are afraid of, so many things to be afraid of, I think, with this virus, the unknowing nature of it, for one thing. But they're afraid that hospital capacity challenges mean either not being able to get the care that you need when you have a genuine emergency or receiving a lower quality of care that could impact your outcome. Are we at that point yet? Do you feel confident that we're not at that point or not going to get there? Help us understand how to think about fears and doubts and concerns in that that are bouncing around people's minds.
No, I understand that is a concern. I think at this point in time, we are not at that level where, you know, we've talked about having to, I guess, ration care or not have enough room in the hospitals to continue to admit patients. You know, we're trying to focus on the Avera region and, you know, adjacent areas that may be needing to transfer patients to an Avera facility. But we're really trying to take care of our patient population in the Avera footprint and not extend beyond that. So we do have the available beds for people when they do come in. But I understand that concern. I'll be honest, my dad just had COVID and ended up in the hospital, and he asked me that same question. Are they going to have an ICU bed if I need one? So it is a concern, and I understand that. But I think at this point in time, we're not to that point. Will we have to go there? I hope not. You know, we have those discussions of what that looks like internally at Avera and how we would handle that situation if we did go there. But hopefully, patients and people in our footprint are heeding the advice as far as staying home and unless they absolutely need to be out doing something, avoiding not only large gatherings, but even small gatherings that aren't necessary. And then, you know, wearing face masks and washing hands regularly. So hopefully we do those things and start to see our numbers start to come down.
I want to ask you more about that, but first, back to your dad. I'm sorry that you know, he had this diagnosis and had to be hospitalized. Can you tell us anything about what your conversation with him is was like, as a way to illustrate to people how medical professionals are dealing with not only the work that they're doing in the world, but the work that they are doing in their own family? What can you tell us about those personal conversations that you're willing to share that would help us understand what it's like to experience that?
You know, I think the conversation I just had, you know, with him, and I tell other patients too, is, you know, you just got to be cognizant of what we understand is kind of the trajectory of COVID, and that is, for most people, they maybe have no symptoms, they may have mild symptoms, but there's a subset of people that, and those with higher comorbidities, they tend to have an increased negative response, I guess. So they start to do worse around that day 8, 9, 10, becoming more short of breath, oxygen starts to drop, and that's kind of when we start to see the hospitalizations go up, and that's just the conversation I had with him, to be cognizant of that. You may be feeling great on day 7, but day 8, you can really turn the corner and go down quickly. So that's where we've kind of been really good with our at-home care and being able to track those patients and have those conversations so that when they do start getting worse, we can intervene on a quicker basis and potentially keep them out of the hospital and take care of them at home.
Are scientists getting closer to understanding why some people's immune systems react so strongly to this disease who appear otherwise healthy? Do we know more about that than we knew before?
You know, I think there's some theories out there as far as why that may be the case. I guess from what I know and read, I can't say that there's anything that is definitive as far as why that is. We talk about, you know, we read about different things as far as previous exposures to even the common coronavirus that's been around for years. And if you've had a recent illness with that, maybe there's some cross reactivity. You hear things about different blood types potentially being a factor. But I think it's going to take some time to really figure out exactly what types of things are protective and not leading people to have that significant of a condition or a clinical course. And those that have a worse clinical course. So time will tell, I think, as we continue to research some of those things.
Yeah, people are sometimes downright superstitious. We're tired, we're mm-hmm. anxious and frightened and wanting something to be hopeful for. And that brings me to something else I wanted to talk to you about, which was, are we all a little vulnerable right now to, you know, dramatic headlines or false hope or scientific breakthroughs? What can you tell us about how we should still be approaching the emerging science about COVID-19 when some of us are becoming ready or even desperate for good news?
Yeah. You know, I think there's some good things that are coming about that we're getting better news on lately. And so I'll start with one is, you know, these therapeutics that we're going to have that hopefully we can start earlier in the course of illness to even prevent hospitalizations and then ultimately decrease mortality. And so recently there was an emergency use authorization for a monoclonal antibody that came out, that's been studied, and so that's out now. So patients that are at high risk for coronavirus, once they're diagnosed, before they're even having bad symptoms, if they're at high risk, they can get this IV treatment and hopefully decrease the risk of hospitalization, once again, and mortality. Avera has been part of a Regeneron study, and we're anticipating that that may get emergency use authorization as well. Regeneron and this other product by Lilly are the same things as far as monoclonal antibodies. So those are promising things that I think are a positive. Certainly from an inpatient standpoint, we've got pretty good treatment protocols as far as steroids and remdesivir, which is an antiviral medication. I think in time, we may see antivirals that can be used early on, much like these monoclonal antibodies, but there's studies going on in regards to that type of outpatient early treatment with antivirals. And then we look at the vaccines in the situation there. So, you know, Pfizer and their vaccine information that just came out, you know, they're 90+% effective. Moderna just released some information today that their vaccine is 90+% effective. So it looks like we have some really good vaccines that are going to be effective in preventing COVID. So I think there are some positive things that we're seeing, but I think we still need to go back to those basic things that I talked about before, because the vaccines aren't going to be, you know, out to the general population for probably a few more months. And, you know, if you can prevent COVID in the first place and not need to have some of these outpatient therapeutics, that's better in and of itself. Mm-hmm. So prevention is the best medicine, I think, for this.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that in just a minute. But first, on the notion of vaccines, as we see things that are released by Pfizer, released by Moderna, what is the FDA oversight as it intersects with some of these really press releases and announcements that the pharmaceutical companies make? Because people want to know what the oversight is and the safety of these vaccines in what is understandably a race to be first.
Yeah, you know, it's looking at the effectiveness, but you're right. You don't want just an effective vaccine. You want to have a safe vaccine. And so the safety data for Pfizer will hopefully be coming out soon. And even the short-term safety data, like you said, it that's good if that short-term data is looking good. But sometimes we don't realize things as far as the safety of whether it's a medication or a vaccine until a number of months down the road after we've administered, you know, hundreds of thousands of doses. And I guess hopefully the early evidence is going to show that it's not only effective but also safe. But for that other side of things, that long-term safety, I guess time will tell. But it's a good thing to know if that early safety data is positive.
And one of the other things about a vaccine is it's not effective if a certain, you know, if people don't take it, if they're not willing to voluntarily be vaccinated. What do we know about side effects at this point from some of those early studies? Are we learning anything about that, or is that too soon of a question to ask?
I think too soon of a question to ask. You know, I would anticipate with any vaccine, there's the side effect of, you know, sore arm, local reaction, just kind of an immune response that we sometimes see with any vaccine, where you kind of get achy and sore for a few days potentially. So those types of common vaccination side effects I would anticipate. But as far as major side effects, I have not seen anything as far as Pfizer or Moderna.
All right, let's go back to this idea of what we should be doing right now. What do you want to see change in the community? How drastic does that change need to be from our behavior in the community right now to what it needs to shift to?
Yeah, I think it's the basic things. It's just doing it. More and more people need to be doing it. So going back to wearing a mask whenever you're out in public and you can't be more than 6 feet away from other people, you need to have a mask on, and you should have a mask on. The other thing is just avoiding social gatherings unless it's something that you absolutely need to go to. And so those are going to bars, restaurants, even social gatherings within your home. I mean, I know of a number of people that patients and just acquaintances that had Halloween parties. And, you know, after that, number of patients got infected and it spread. You know, we look at Thanksgiving coming up in the Christmas holidays, but having those conversations of, is this something that I really need to do? Is it a gathering that I really need to go to? And is it worth doing that? And it may be worth it. You know, someone might be young and healthy, And they may think it's worth it for them, but if they get it and they're asymptomatic and give it to their grandparent or give it to somebody else that then transmits it to their grandparent or their brother that is at high risk and they end up in the hospital and passing away. So that's the way we got to think about it is we're not doing this just for our own safety. We're doing it for the betterment of our friends, family, and the people in our community.
When we look at the numbers, the infection rate, and the number of hospitalizations in South Dakota, what don't we get?
I think if you, you know, if you look at some of the statistics that that are maybe shown as far as the percent of ICU beds that may be occupied by COVID patients, so, you know, depending on the location, that could be, you know, 30 to 50%, but I don't think when you look at a percentage, you don't understand that we have doubled our ICU beds. And so the number of ICU patients with COVID is probably 125%, you know, 100% of what our normal ICU numbers are. You know, hospitalization is kind of the same rate. So we've created more bed space as the COVID numbers have gone up. And then when you look at, you know, sometimes when they talk about the percent of ICU beds available. Sometimes they're throwing in perhaps NICU beds or pediatric ICU beds. And as we know, there's not a lot of risk for infants or even, you know, teenagers as far as needing hospitalization when it comes to COVID. That's a pretty small group of patients. So when we look at adult ICU beds, those are the numbers that are really kind of staggering, and that's what we're really fighting to try and get staffing and creating those beds for those patients.
Do you think when you talk to patients, when you talk to other healthcare providers who are providing feedback about what's happening in the hospitals and clinics, do South Dakotans not understand how this works still? Are they confused? Are they choosing not to? Do we have some sense of patients coming in and saying, I have no idea how this happened? Or what is going on? Do you have any sense from, you know, anecdotally what you're seeing on the ground? You know, because we can look at those big statistics and we can look at numbers, and sometimes, you know, it's the doctors and nurses who know based on, you know, 3 12-hour shifts in a row, this is what I'm hearing from people. Any insight there?
You know, just from, you know, conversations I've had, it seems like there's a whole spectrum. So there's people that, know there's COVID. They understand that there's a risk, but they're willing to take that risk for themselves and, you know, continue to, be out and socially engaging and active and maybe not wearing face masks. And then, unfortunately, I think there's a certain percent of people that don't believe that COVID even exists or that it's just influenza. And though it's hard to convince people that that's not, the reality of the situation. Sometimes I think it takes someone really close to them, perhaps, to get infected and have a negative outcome before that changes minds, which is unfortunate. But I just wish people would take it seriously and once again encourage everybody to wear a mask when you're in public and stay home unless you need to be out.
Tell people why this is not influenza. Why is it different from the flu? If they still don't get it or have someone in their lives who thinks it's roughly the same thing, what are the main points to say, no, this is different?
Well, we know it's different just because of the degree of illness and, you know, mortality and stuff. I mean, we don't even see influenza really start to take off in South Dakota until, you know, probably January. And obviously we have, throughout the state of South Dakota, hundreds of people in the hospital related to COVID. So it just doesn't make sense from a, statistical standpoint in what we're seeing that this is related to influenza or a non-COVID issue. I mean, it's absolutely related to this new virus that unfortunately we're going to have to continue to deal with long term.
All right. You said a few times wear a mask, so let's close on that. And you also said stay home, and I think that's a strong ending as well. That you know, back in March we were getting, you know, executive orders, or you know, individual communities had their own shutdowns, or there was this very specific things, and now things are a little more general. Is it time to do some of those, you know, to order your groceries in if you're high risk, to stay home and say no to just, you know, everything at this point? Help people make some of those final decisions, or some of those, you know, decisions this week before we let you head out the door.
Yeah, I it definitely is that time to really think hard about those decisions that you're making. So once again, it do you really need to go to the wedding, even if it's a small one? Do you need to have Thanksgiving with your family, especially if you have, you know, elderly family members that would be joining, people at high risk? Is it worth going to the other social gathering, bar, whatever, going out to eat at the restaurant? I mean, are those things that you really need to do, or could you just skip it this year and or celebrate that thing in a different way? Ordering in food is a great example. You know, support our local restaurants, but you know, dine out and carry out. So that would be kind of my recommendation from those things, because it's not, we're seeing, you know, we're not doing a lot of the big gatherings. It's a lot of the small gatherings that I think are contributing to the spread of this as well.
Dr. Chad Torrey is with Avera Health. You've been generous with your time. We thank you for that today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.